and honorable staff at all. And in terms of the rules, in terms of the ruling, in the absence of the chairperson, now we have to elect an acting chairperson for the day. I will open the floor for nominations. Honorable Jeff.
I nominate the Honorable Gungubele, who seems to have anyway assumed that he's going to be that anyway, so I don't know why.
Honorable Smart seconded that. Do we have any further nominations?
Chair, yes, and if I can add mine, I've got a dentist appointment at 11:30.
You've got an interest in the acceptance of these apologies. Okay. First, today we've got only one item. I'm not sure if members, there's anything that is urgent. If not attended today, South Africa would be turned upside down. That we need to address, other than what is in front of us. I thought we had last week. Do you want to respond?
Okay. I have indeed revised the program. Maybe the only problem is that I didn't bring a copy. But as advised during the last meeting, I have scheduled public hearings on the trafficking bill. And those will take place on the 24th and 25th of August. And then from there, then we'll continue, with the department responding and then deliberating. But I will circulate the revised program after this meeting.
It's harassment.
The harassment bill will take a briefing tomorrow. And then from there, as we agreed, we are going to prioritize trafficking. And then if necessary, if the committee feels that we should run them at the same time, then we can maybe establish a subcommittee to look at harassment. Or if we feel that it's not a priority bill as such, then we can maybe park it until the next time.
Oh, sorry, but Ms. Natasha Michael, MP, is our specialist in both of those areas, so she will look after both of those bills.
What are we doing now?
Chair, I'm just advising from my side that I'll be the expert.
But I don't want any harassment. Can we close this issue in this manner? We've agreed that the human trafficking bill should be prioritized. What we require before us is a timetable that reflects that intention. And in doing so, we didn't agree that therefore we remove harassment bill. In other words, they will be going together, and the fact that harassment comes up front is because it must also be part of that process. And I think the program is adopted, we'll be implementing now. Thank you very much. Tomorrow it will be harassment bill. Today is a briefing by the Department of Justice and Consular Development on the dedicated courts convened for the World Cup and on human trafficking during the World Cup, successes, challenges and lessons. I think the language is straightforward. Things happened for about 30 days. We thought it is important as a portfolio committee to listen to the department, their reflection on the activities of the World Cup regarding dedicated courts. A lot of people have spoken about them. A lot of people have been calling, saying, why can't they be done after the World Cup in the same manner? Can't you dispute these things in the same manner after the World Cup? And also the issue of human trafficking, which actually did rear its head during the process. Can we hand over to the department?
No, Chair, I'm not alone. I'm not alone. Thanks very much, Chair, for welcome. It will be myself.
So you are the boss?
Yes.
Okay.
There are two. It's actually one presentation divided into two. The one aspect will focus on human trafficking, and Kamohelo Likubu Wilderson will lead us on that presentation. And shortly after she has presented, we will then ask Mr. Mosala, who was the head of the World Cup unit, to do a presentation on dedicated courts, and then we'll take questions. We'll start with the human trafficking. So Kamohelo will lead us.
Thank you, honorable members. This report is a report in respect of the plan that we tabled on the 21st of April, when the portfolio committee requested that we as a JCPS cluster show how we're going to manage human trafficking during the World Cup. A number of issues were also raised by the portfolio committee that we actually went back and included into our plan to make sure that we respond to those issues effectively. We have therefore included them as part of our report today. Would like to first talk around the concern that members had around the fact that there was no comprehensive legislation dealing with human trafficking, how we're going to deal with this matter. As part of the presentation, we raised the issue that we could go and conduct a training in the regions to ensure that the teams that will be responsible for managing human trafficking are aware of the different legislative pieces that can be utilized in managing human trafficking. We also outlined a number of common law offenses that could be utilized in ensuring that the perpetrators would be brought to book. These are outlined in the presentation, and we really made sure that the teams in provinces are aware of this, and we did this in various ways. We did this through training, and the second way is through the Administration of Justice program. They basically, when they went to do their sensitization presentations in their teams in the provinces, they also stipulated the importance of human trafficking and taking note of the training that we have conducted. And as part of that training, we produced a training CD to make sure that when we leave, people have something that they could refer to. So that's the first part. We made sure that all the teams, Department of Social Development, SAPS, and the prosecutors had the information, as well as the Department of Social Development. Then we went on to the second issue. The second issue was that was identified by the committee was the fact that we did not have the legislation in place. Victims could be exposed to being sent back home without us dealing with the perpetrators. And the Department of Home Affairs was asked to put together something to ensure that victims are not forced to be repatriated once they are found without proper documentation. The Department of Home Affairs is compiling a report in respect of that. I don't have their report, but they are compiling a report, and the committee should be getting the report with our comprehensive report that will be presented subsequently. In addition to issues around legislation, we had to look at victim support issues to say, in case we had problems, how would we tackle the issue of managing the victim once they are presented either to any stakeholder. The Department of Social Development had a special program where they accredited about 13 shelters. And these shelters were, the managers and the staff were put through intensive training from April, and even till now we still running some victim empowerment programs with the stakeholders, not only shelter managers, but also our stakeholders within our different service points. These service points would include the Tutuzela Care Centers, the victim empowerment forums. It even includes people working within national office dealing with complaints, because often you get people who do not have the skill of really dealing with the issues sensitively. So we've trained those people who deal with complaints or come into contact with victims of human trafficking. The training was quite intensive in the sense that there were different modules that dealt with the implementation of the various act, utilization of the various act. We also outlined processes that social workers would go through, and these processes were made part of the standard operating procedures. The standard operating procedures, which were basically utilized in the National Joint Operations Centers as well as in the service points. Critical to this training that we conducted was the fact that we had to make sure that frontline officers would be able to screen and assess victims to check whether they are victims of human trafficking or any other kind of offense that may fall outside of the purview of human trafficking. We also made sure that we understand, all role players understand the short-term needs and the long-term needs of victims. One of the issues that we highlighted, that were highlighted by the members as well, is the short-term needs in terms of their traveling documents and making sure that we could have referrals. We had referrals with the Department of Home Affairs. The additional areas that we also focused on was on repatriation of victims of human trafficking, because sometimes we anticipated that some victims would want to be repatriated. Currently, the Department of Social Development is running it has a unit that deals with repatriation. As part of the planning and the ensuring state of readiness, we ensure that all stakeholders are aware of this unit and that they have the contact details of the unit so that they could do easy referrals. The International Social Services Directorate was responsible for training the shelter managers and shelters that were identified in terms of ensuring that they are able to prep the victim for relocation, and they are able to identify corresponding NGOs that where the victims would be relocated. So in a sense, we ensure that all the stakeholders are really aware of the procedures that are followed in ensuring that there's proper repatriation where such would be happening. I will skip through and go through to the rehabilitation programs for victims of human trafficking. one of the major issues that we noted is that victims of human trafficking are introduced to drugs, and often they are made to be dependent on substance abuse. And as a result, it would be difficult for a shelter that does not manage normally a drug-dependent victim to really do a proper management of the victim. So this training ensured that at least there is basic training on crisis management for victims. And what we did is we ensured that once a victim has been identified as a victim needing rehabilitation, you'd be able to manage them in the short term, but then refer to the Department of Health. And we had those links with the Department of Health. Additional services that we prepared, other court services like court preparation officers who are responsible for making sure that if a victim is supposed to appear in court to give evidence, they are familiar with the court processes, they are familiar with the court environment, so that they could give their support to the state case. And unfortunately, we didn't have the opportunity to use this training that we did impart to court preparation officers. We did not have the opportunity to train intermediaries. However, all the regions were informed that it is important to actually make intermediaries available for any children who may have been trafficked into the country during the period. And we made sure that all the dedicated courts had links with intermediaries through our regional offices at the Department of Justice. We also considered information management as a critical part of managing or identifying cases of human trafficking, because most of the cases would be coming via the police through to the courts. The FIFA World Cup Administration of Justice was responsible for ensuring that the cases are picked up. And also the Department of Social Development developed a special tool that focused specifically on picking up human trafficking cases. They are currently compiling a report on their experiences with human trafficking. But preliminary, their report is that most of the cases that they dealt with when they did the screening, they kind of picked up that the sex workers came to their centers and they would stay for a few days and be released, because once they are identified as people who do not should not be part of human trafficking, they would be released. But often it was on the request of the people who would be brought to the centers. But that report should be made available by the end of August. The Department of Home Affairs has not given us a report of any FIFA World Cup related human trafficking cases. However, they said they will provide the report. I'm not too sure when would they be able to provide the report, but we have engaged them to make sure that we have some kind of sense as to whether they did identify FIFA World Cup related cases of human trafficking. In terms of public education and communication, there were intensive activities before the FIFA World Cup and during the World Cup, and we focused on the Red Card campaign, which was launched on the 24th of May, which included a door-to-door drop-off of information and red card campaign. Yes, meaning that all of the perpetrators are given a red card to get out of the country if they intended to do harm to children or vulnerable groups. This campaign started in Nelspruit, and I'm pleased to say that our minister gave it his full support and was part of the opening of this campaign. It's an ongoing campaign. It focuses on children to raise awareness among children. We're looking at schools and all sorts of centers where children congregate to make them aware of human trafficking. Because if we don't get the children in the malls and everywhere where they are, we may run the risk of them being victims of human trafficking. The Department of Justice ensures that all its officials are aware of specific provisions of the Children's Act that deal with human trafficking. As a new act, it became very pertinent that we make sure that the officers beyond prosecutors are aware of the provisions that govern human trafficking. And this act actually provides a more comprehensive, it provided a much clearer guideline in terms of managing human trafficking, but unfortunately it focuses on children only. The portfolio committee requested that we develop a comprehensive, well, an information kind of booklet that would guide all the service providers on how to manage human trafficking. Because most of the departments had already developed their standard operating procedures on management of cases related to the FIFA World Cup, it was quite easy for us to work quickly and zoom in onto human trafficking. Within at least a period of 2 weeks of being at the portfolio committee, we were able to produce a draft a booklet which we called the Frontline Service Guide in Managing Human Trafficking and Related Crimes, because we realized that people need to be aware that we don't focus only on human trafficking, that we should focus on other related crimes, because that's where human trafficking is often hidden. This guideline was distributed to the various stakeholders. What was interesting about the guideline is that it made sure that we've got all the contact details and names of people in the different departments to ensure that frontline officers would be able to call to refer easily. And we also identified all the services that could be used for victims of human trafficking. Unfortunately, we were not able to print by the end of the World Cup. However, the guideline will still be useful. We are going ahead to print the guideline. And we've made it in such a way that it has a long lifespan over the 1 month period. So we'll be using that. One of the things that we'll be doing is to make sure that once the human trafficking bill is passed, we will revise the standard operating procedures to comply with if there are any new processes that we would need to add, we would add those in the guidelines. About 100,000 copies will be printed. Each department will have about 10,000 that will be distributed to frontline officers. We have asked that that we'll be developing a distribution strategy so that we can test its effectiveness, see whether it's faulty, for its improvement. I've touched a lot on training. beyond the training that we conducted as part of the blitz training, the Department of Labor had already trained about 100 of its officials to be able to identify and screen victims of human trafficking, especially children. And this was done through the Tsirelezani program. We made it clear to the department that they needed to make sure that they continue to identify and conduct their inspections during the World Cup to see if there are any children that are being used for labor trafficking. And they have reported that there were no cases that were identified during the World Cup. Each department used its own budget to conduct their own sectoral activities and plans to implement the program. And the program was basically implemented within the National Joint Operation Committee sphere, where all the departments were working hand in hand. I think that Mr. Mzala will explain more on this. Part of the learnings that we have are the fact that the departments have the capacity and the ability to work together closely. We're continuing to do that in terms of the plan that was presented to use the National Human Trafficking Committee that is led by the department, by the National Prosecution Authority, as our focal point for operational issues. And the Department of Justice will continue to monitor the passing of the bill as well as the development of the national policy framework. So in a sense, this has brought us closer in terms of our thinking on how we should go forward with the human trafficking bill. The experiences that the various departments have picked up will be addressed. We had planned to have a workshop on the 23rd and 24th of August, but probably we'll move it earlier to see what are the areas within the bill that may need to be revised because of those experiences that the departments have had. Thank you.
Thank you,
Miss Likubu.
Likubu.
Well done, sir.
Thank you very much.
Chair, thanks. I don't know if we're going to discuss it, but I would probably be leaving before the next presentation is finished, so I don't know if you will allow me just the indulgence of a comment.
What's the view? Let's deal with it. We'll be mixing clarification questions for clarifications and comments and discussions. We'll find a way to summarize them at the end.
No, I mean the presentation is very interesting. I mean, as far as just if I can confirm that I've got it right, there is a report awaited from Home Affairs. But what we've heard basically, presumably from the courts, there's an emphatic statement that there were no trafficking cases. Presumably that's also from the police. But are we then being told that no trafficking cases were detected during the 2010 World Cup? If I can just get the answer, then make a comment after that.
Yes, there were no trafficking cases that went through to courts.
My question is, were there any detected?
There's a difference between detecting them and taking them to court. Can you answer that question?
The cases that the police may have identified, but I don't don't know about the police, but they would have had to refer them to prosecutors for assessment. Yes.
As a matter of fact, were there any cases detected?
Not through the courts.
Yeah, maybe I can assist. Basically, it's not a satisfactory answer because detection would come from the police, it would come from the social workers. So that's two departments. So, to assist, we know you've written about the courts. Is there any report from the police that they detected any trafficking? Is there any report from social workers that they detected trafficking? Is there any report from anyone that they detected any trafficking?
I think this question we are complicating. It is straightforward. From the relevant appropriate institutions, as a matter of fact, any such cases detected?
The Department of Labor has reported that they have not detected any human trafficking cases. The Department of Social Development is compiling a report that can be made available to Parliament. I don't know whether it's detection or...
Sorry, Mr. Cooper. Is it correct to say, to date,
yes,
as a department, you don't have a record to that effect?
Yes.
Can we leave it at that point?
Okay, yeah, Chair. I mean, look, I it's a pity we get this presentation and there's not clarity, but and it would be relatively simple. But I think the issue is look, one can't, there was a debate before the World Cup. We were told about thousands in the previous World Cup. There was then a point made that the whole thing was being over-exaggerated. And it would appear from the report, although it's an incomplete report, that does seem to be the case. And I do think we should learn lessons from that, all of us in South Africa, particularly the bodies that were putting forward this view that there was going to be this flood. I'm not sure if there are how many NGOs are present here, but it would be useful to know from NGOs what their assessment is of trafficking during the World Cup. It's not belittling trafficking or reducing the problem with trafficking. But it's a thing of let's not over-exaggerate where there's no need to. Having said that, I mean, I think as the input has been made, that hopefully, you know, there was an attempt to put a comprehensive program in place. A lot's been done. Hopefully we would learn from it. The workshop that you're intending to conduct would be, I think, useful in terms of informing us for the... For the trafficking bill, but I think it is quite remarkable if there was no detection of trafficking. Either it happened and it wasn't detected, or it didn't really happen.
I think there's a risk we must avoid in dealing with it. Probably, I'm sure we are not suggesting that human trafficking is not serious as we speak, because the kind of interviews and radios about the experiences of different people, probably what I would request the committee to do is to await all the relevant institutions to give reports. I'm not comfortable, like Honorable JJ, that the department came here without actually ensuring that information is here. Because we stand at a risk of making wrong what we call assumptions. And I think it's very critical, because one of the things that I had was revealed was the seriousness of the domestic human trafficking over and above the what we call the international one. Honorable Schwartz?
Chair, one can look at this in various manners. Firstly, the publicity before the World Cup could have reduced what was to have been expected. Or secondly, as pointed out in this publication issued by the Minister of Police, because of the invisibility of the crime, measures to count it have been inadequate and fragmented so far. Now, we are soon after the World Cup. We don't know how many cases the police have opened. And I know in Velcom there was a arrayed on a place. There was places in various other places as well where there might be cases that the dockets are still being prepared and the prosecutors in the department would not be aware of it. But the fact remains is that trafficking does take place. And we cannot underestimate that fact. And I think that one's got to be very careful. We need, as you've correctly pointed out, information. I'd like to know what steps proactively as well. For example, the Valcom case was a gentleman's club, or if you'd like to call that, with exotic dancers that was raided, and there were found to be women there that were kept against their will. Now that case is probably being investigated at the moment and has not come. There was a case here in Maitland as well of women that were kept against their will. That was also during the World Cup. It obviously wasn't brought because they're complex cases. Trafficking cases are complex. In fact, the statistics say almost 80% of cases that are brought are withdrawn because of intimidation of witnesses and that. So I think this is an ongoing issue that one's got to look at. There are so many factors. This report, or this media report in this publication by the Minister of Safety and Security, also indicates that there's large-scale corruption in our own departments that contributes to this. So, Chair, these are all factors that one's got to, whilst one would like to think, and I think that it has reduced because of the publicity, but the fact is it remains and takes various forms, one of which is illegal mining. Young boys are known to be trafficked to be involved in illegal mining. Has that ever been looked into? There's also trafficking for the purposes of body parts, muti. Here in the Cape Flats, there's evidence of families getting into debt and then renting out their children to gang lords. This is noted and in this publication, so it's widespread, and I think that is why it's so necessary to continue the prioritization of that human trafficking bill. Thank you, Chair.
I'm sure the country would like to know, was there any trafficking for the World Cup? You know, Mr. Swart speaks about a raid in Valcom. I mean, there was no... I would imagine that was not related to the World Cup because there were no World Cup events in Valcom. Because anyone arrested for trafficking would have presumably been charged with the FIFA World Cup courts. They'd have to appear within a particular period of time. But it would be useful to get, as soon as possible, an official figure from all the relevant departments whether there was any detection of trafficking for the World Cup. It'll also, I'm sure, help the next World Cup in Rio. So from the police, from the social workers, you've mentioned Department of Labor, Department of Home Affairs, maybe there were trafficking victims that were turned back at the borders. So it would be useful to get to those figures. And then also from civil society. Are there any allegations from other people that there was trafficking going on that was not detected? Because then one would need to look at why was it not detected.
Once we're about to close it at that point, I think what is not necessarily satisfactory is that one is not totally comfortable with the state of the department's readiness to present this information. Because the issue of interacting with all the relevant institutions must have been reasonably one of the most important issues in your mind. Because you intend to inform Parliament about an objective situation which is as fully informative as possible. Fully informative means all the relevant issues that you know of, you must have interacted with them. You should be saying with us, these type of institutions we interacted with them. This is a report they could give, police and so on and so on. And then the department must accept that. My proposal to the committee would be, probably, we should, since we are going to process the bill anyway, we are going to be seized with this matter. We should try during that process to interact as many relevant institutions as possible so that the presentation on what happened in the World Cup does not end today. It continues even during the processes. Because the issue remains very serious in South Africa.
What rate at which it is happening is another question. The objective information will actually tell us the exact truth. Can we leave it at that point? Do you want to make any...
The JCPS cluster DGs have requested a fuller report on human trafficking, and that's where I believe that we will have the details from the department as to whether there were human trafficking cases related to the FIFA World Cup. Hence, they are preparing reports, and that report is, I think it will be tabled in the next JCPS cluster meeting. We will be ready to present it whenever you call us, the 23rd or around that time.
No, that this committee has a principal responsibility in terms of legislation in this matter. Therefore, it needs a sound information around the issue. Probably you guys could have told us that there's still a major information coming from the cluster. Can we leave it at that point? Yes, Ms. Mink.
Sorry, Chair. I just want to say this much. Of course we want to know what happened during the World Cup, because it's relevant, and as Honourable Jeffrey said, it will help in Rio, and et cetera, et cetera. But it's not good enough just to know what happened during the World Cup. We actually need to know what's happening all the time, because we are going to process this bill. And this is a bill going forward. The World Cup is now over, and we need to know what's happening in our country at all times, not only during FIFA World Cup time.
What's that?
Now, could we get a report as to the outcome of the Malachi case? That's the suspected De Fugger case. You can maybe find out that's the Polesmore case. And the outcome of the sentencing in the KZN case, where previously you briefed us that was ongoing. I think that sentencing is now completed. And that's not just the World Cup, that's the broader trafficking and other cases that you are aware of trafficking that is being prosecuted by the courts at the moment. And that would be beyond, because you said there are none World Cup, but there obviously are others in the country that are being prosecuted at the moment. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Actually, can I take this opportunity to also remind the department, you will be informed of the dates of us dealing with the human trafficking, the human trafficking bill, and probably you will use that opportunity to give us quite a tastier information, if there's such English. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for appearing. And let's go to the next section. Dedicated courts.
Thanks, Chair.
I hope we assume that all the necessary information has been secured. Proceed.
Chair, we do have all the information on the dedicated courts. I will just request Mr. Musala to bring the committee on the dedicated courts. Mr. Musala.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. The presentation on the dedicated court is the second presentation that we'll deal with, and it will cover the following aspects: project background, project objectives, project impact assessment, lessons learned, legacy issues, 2010 related case statistics, budget expenditure, and the way forward. I'll start with the background, Chair, and briefly say that the 2010 FIFA World Cup Administration of Justice project was initiated to determine the roles of the various integrated justice stakeholders, in particular Department of Justice, the National Prosecuting Authority, the Legal Aid South Africa, and the Judiciary. And the intention was to ensure effective administration of justice during the 2010 FIFA World Cup. The project objective was to deal with all criminal matters emanating from the event in a fast, efficient, and especially where foreigners are involved or were involved, either as complainant, witnesses or accused. And a project assessment was undertaken after the World Cup, and it was based on the methodology that was adopted before the implementation. And that methodology covered the concept, the initiation stage, the planning, execution, and close out. And I'll deal with each of the stages under project impact assessment. The first one will be the concept phase. During this phase, we dealt with two aspects in the main. The first one is around what the department needed to do. The second one is how the department fitted in the bigger scheme of things. The first one, what the department needed to do, was based on the guarantee that was signed by our minister on the 9th of July 2003. Out of that guarantee, a positional paper was developed as a way of justifying the need for the project. And the outcome of that was that project management approach was followed. And it was agreed that there should be a governance structure in place. And the impact of that was to give direction, clear direction on the project. That's the first part. The second part on this concept phase, Chair, is that we had to fit in the bigger picture. And that was that the department was part of the Project 15 of the entire project for 2010. And we became a sub-project of that project. And as a result of that, we had to liaise with all safety and security stakeholders, South African Police Services, Department of Correctional Services, Home Affairs, and other stakeholders. And the outcome was that the project was well integrated. We were integrated in the net joints as well as in the prop joints. And the impact of that was that duplication of efforts was prevented, coordination was strengthened, and project plans were aligned. And that is the two issues under the concept phase. Under the initiation phase, Chair, we dealt with four aspects in the main. The first aspect that we dealt with was the establishment of a 2010 FIFA World Cup Administration of Justice project governance. And the output was a structure to lead and guide the project. Structures were identified, and these structures were the following. The minister was identified as the project sponsor. A national steering committee was put in place. A project office was also put in place. 9 provincial steering committees were put in place. 4 project owners were identified. The natural stakeholders, DOJ, NPA, LASA, and judiciary. And we had representation from SAPS, from Department of Correctional Services, and other relevant departments. And the impact of that was the required leadership was provided to ensure smooth running of preparations. That's the first aspect under the initiation phase. The second one, we needed to determine how other countries managed events of this magnitude in the context of the administration of justice. And we invited the German LOC committee that dealt with safety and security issues during their World Cup in 2006. We also sent some of the colleagues to the Euro 2008 in Switzerland. And out of that, a foundation was established for the administration of justice to develop plan. So we had a firm foundation. We knew how Germany dealt with these issues and how Euro in Switzerland dealt with these issues. This benchmarking made the project team to adopt a different approach for the European country because of the difference in socioeconomic aspects. we realize that in those countries, because of different socio-economic aspects, there were less issues related to crime that they dealt with, and we therefore changed our approach. Lessons of strong coordination were also applied. The third issue was that we organized workshops for individual stakeholders within the justice system. We had workshops for the prosecutors, and they discussed how they would go about dealing with prosecutors issues during the World Cup, the judiciary, the legal in South Africa, as well as language services. And the output thereof was organizational knowledge was gathered from these four workshops. And out of that, individual project plans per service provider were compiled. The impact was that clear direction on how to proceed in preparation for the World Cup event was chartered. There was direction. The fourth issue that we dealt with under the initiation phase was that a core team was put together to identify and develop a roadmap or a scope of work, the direction that we would take, given the outcome of the workshop. And a scope of work was developed, a macro scope of work was developed, and it sort of created parameters on what was to be included in the plans and what to be excluded in the plan. And the impact was that a clear guideline was available to all project teams on what is expected to be delivered during the World Cup. So these are the four-ish aspects that were dealt with during the initiation phase. Then we moved on to the planning phase of the World Cup, where we dealt with nitty-gritties on what we needed to do. And the scope of work was our first. The developed scope of work was used as a basis for developing plans. So we detailed project plans had to be developed, and detailed schedules, you know, with days on what is to be delivered when. Services were analyzed, services that were to be rendered by the department. Resource requirements were determined, human and financial resources requirements were determined. Infrastructure requirements like facilities and security issues around our course were also determined. So out of this, all resource shortages were determined after determining, doing this analysis of services that we need, of resources that we need, we determined shortages. And services that we required were identified, like your DOJ admin services, local and foreign language services, infrastructure services, and so on. I'll not go through the whole list. The impact of this is also clear direction of day-to-day activities at micro level was provided, and clear decisions were taken. The second aspect under the planning phase was to undertake trial runs. Now that we had plans in place, we had to do trial runs. And we used the Super 14 rugby matches for the trial runs where we opened our court. We used strongman competition in the Eastern Cape in PE to trial run. We opened our court during that. We used soccer matches. We used the run Easter show. We also used the Confederations Cup for trial runs. And our courts were open to just trial run, and we're using normal cases that would go to court during that period. And what we learned out of the trial run was that that there was a need to integrate stakeholders at the court level. While stakeholders work well at JCPS cluster at national level and at provincial level, The stakeholders were still fragmented at court level. The judiciary and other stakeholders were not meeting and were not doing what they're supposed to do. So a new concept of the Court Operations Center was then born as a result of the trial run, where stakeholders at court level would meet on a daily basis to assess what the courts needed to do on that day. For example, if there are new cases, which courts will be opened, which cases are ready, whether prisoners will be brought on time. So at court level, the stakeholders met and planned for the day. And the outcome of this was that plans were tested and evaluated. A blueprint for the World Cup operational plan were revised. And the impact of was that crucial lessons were learned and were applied during the World Cup itself. So that these are the two aspects of the planning phase. And then we then entered the execution phase, the World Cup itself, when the game started, the 2 weeks before the actual kickoff and the 2 weeks after the World Cup. And during this phase, we dealt with two aspects in the main. The first one was the launch of dedicated courts by our minister. The courts were officially opened in Randburg at a ceremony hosted by the minister. And the outcome thereof was information was shared regarding 2010 FIFA World Cup and as well as implementation plans. The impact of that was that awareness was created to the rest of the country about the dedicated courts, where they will be, and then the times they will operate. Assurance was also given to the public that swift justice will be administered during the World Cup. That's the first aspect. The second aspect was the activation of the 56 dedicated courtrooms with the necessary resources. Capacity on demand was guaranteed during the determined hours, meaning if there's a case that needs attention of the World Cup, calls that it will be given. The all the role players will be available to deal with the case. The outcome was that all criminal cases emanating from the event, according to the case definition, were dealt with efficiently, and the impact was that excellent administration of justice services were delivered during the World Cup. Confidence was created in South Africa's justice, in the South Africa's criminal justice system, locally and to the rest of the world. And integration and synergy was established among all justice stakeholders. And the last phase, Chair, is the closeout phase, which we're still busy with, because our courts only closed on the 25th of July, 2 weeks after the World Cup. So we've not finalized the stage, but during the World Cup, on daily basis, we received daily narrative and statistical reports from all the regions, from all the courts. On daily basis, we briefed the minister, the DG, and all stakeholders about what happened in our courts. We are currently engaging stakeholders at regional level with interviews, the magistrates, the prosecutors, as a formal process of closing out the project. And then we have this preliminary closeout report, which we are presenting to yourselves today. And the outcome is we are now getting thorough understanding of what worked well during implementation, as well as challenges experienced. The impact of this closeout report, we expecting that lessons learned will flow into our case flow management forum. Lessons learned, ineffective communication will flow into the JCPS cluster. We also anticipate that lessons learned will be used in setting up dedicated anti-corruption courts. The lessons learned will also strengthen cluster coordination. We can also, if requested by the next host, to present lessons learned to them. That
you may be blood B.
if we are presented that, of course. On the lessons learned, Chair, I've emphasized the importance of the Court Operations Center. I think at the heart of, if we can call this success, I don't know, the Court Operations Center worked well in all the courts. Each and every court at the Court Operations Center, it met every morning, and it was in most cases chaired by court managers or members of the judiciary. And during that Court Operations Center meetings, all aspects of preparing the day for the court were dealt with, whether you have all the relevant papers that are needed to go to court, whether you've got all relevant people that need. So cases were not unnecessarily postponed because people could deal with those issues on a daily basis and try and avoid problems. So the structure functioned at court operation level. All stakeholders were represented. Communication between stakeholders was strengthened, integrated with joint structures at provincial and national. They reviewed, like I've said, previous day's activity and planning of day ahead. Problems were identified and dealt with. Only trial-ready cases went to court. Postponement and remands became the number one enemy of the Court Operations Center. And daily monitoring of court performance, like we received tests on a daily basis and at national, and we needed to know from them why a case was postponed, what are the reasons. So that helped a lot. And where there were no cases, the courts dealt with non-2010 related matters as well. The second lessons learned was dedicated and committed resources. It showed that those resources that were assigned duties during the World Cup were dedicated, and they were not delaying cases. All stakeholders were immediately available. Effective communication between departments also helped because we had deployed some of the members at the net jobs and the prop jobs, and whenever there's information at that level, it would flow down to the court where the court would start getting ready to deal with whatever is reported. Like I said, the project model created a paradigm shift on all levels, because we could work with all stakeholders. We had a court operations, and so it changed the way people looked at things. That reduced time in awaiting trial, because very few cases were postponed, and few people were kept. Very few cases were postponed, and reduced time in resolving cases. These are the lessons learned. On the legacy aspect, Chair, the infrastructure legacy was around facility and security upgrades of dedicated courts. The dedicated courts security was upgraded, certain facilities were upgraded. Installation of generators at the dedicated court was another aspect. All the dedicated courts got generators so that in case there were problems with power, then they could still continue with their daily work. The volunteer program is another legacy aspect of the World Cup. 293 unemployed youth were trained in accredited customer service management course, and this training was funded by SACITA. A number of these volunteers were deployed at the dedicated course to assist there. And the department is looking at opportunities to use these volunteers post the World Cup to give them internships if it's possible and if budget allow. And like I've said, the Court Operations Center is one legacy that this World Cup created. We hope it will be carried forward. And the training of foreign language interpreters that were employed by the department is another legacy aspect that came from the World Cup. The statistical report of the World Cup, Chair, we've attached a detailed statistical report. What is here is just a summary of all the statistics. A total number of 222 cases went through our courts. 202 were finalized. Out of these 202 cases, there are 138 convictions, 12 acquittals, 52 withdrawals. total number of cases in process are 20, meaning 20 were postponed, and they will still be going on. If we break this per province, majority of these cases came from Gauteng, followed by the Western Cape, the Eastern Cape, KZN, Northwest. And because there were no major activities in the Northern Cape, there were no 2010 related cases reported there, although there was a team that was based in the Northern Cape. But there were no major activities around there. With regard to the budget chair expenditure, as at the 25th of July when we closed our courts, the 45 million that was allocated by the department were at 16% in terms of expenditure. But obviously that will increase because of the more claims that will come from overtime of people who work from. At that time, some of the claims were not processed, but there was very little money spent. No, Chief, people who worked overtime when this was. The last aspect of this presentation, Chair, is the way forward. Like I've said, lessons learned will flow into case flow management. Lessons learned will be shared with the next host country. Lessons learned will be used in the dedicated anti-corruption court as the department. We will receive this from our DG. Lessons learned in effective communication will flow into the JCPS cluster. And that's the end of the presentation, Chair. Thank you.
I think if the department, I assume the department is here today. And on the 11th, we'll be dealing with the quarterly reports of the department. This is not the perfect thing we want in terms of format, but it's closer to what we want. If you look in 3.1, it says input. And what is the output? It what has been a position paper. You can go and measure that thing without explaining any other thing. There's a message I'm sending for the 11th of August. It says output developed position paper. You can measure that thing without thinking about anything else, without explaining any other story. It says outcome project management and government structure. As a result of that paper, this is what they have. Impact. These are micro processes of a logical model planning. The point I'm trying to make is that I do not understand why can this approach be applied anywhere else. I don't understand. It doesn't make sense to me. Sometimes I'm tempted to believe that I know this is an unfair statement I'm going to make. Sometimes I'm tempted to believe that senior managers know how to do these things, but they just don't want to do them. Because an input, output, outcome, impact, that language is simple. And here it had to be done because it was closely supervised, closely checked. Everybody was here. The president, the minister, Blatter, everybody was watching it very closely. Managers had no chance there to do it correctly. But once things are a bit loose, there's a funny language that comes. And the question is, shall I believe that managers are not capable of doing this thing? Is it possible that they don't know the difference between output, input, outcome? Is it possible that we should believe we have got such managers? I don't want to believe that. Somebody must make me believe it. I'm tempted to say managers don't want to do these things. This is an impressive presentation as far as I'm concerned. But there are some minor things that needs to be sorted out to put it to the level of legal aid, what do you call it? Legal aid board. Can I say that? Honorable B. Swanyon, Honorable Tapan, Honorable Swartz, Honorable Swartz, can you see when an input seems to, I'm sorry to be emotional like this. Honorable Swanyon.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got just three questions. And the first question is, the dedicated courts, not the special courts, the dedicated courts had two sessions, the morning one and the afternoon one. The question is it, okay, before that question, we know that the attorneys also volunteered to be presiding officers, to be adjudicators in this. The question is it possible to do this on our normal judicial system with the magistrates, in other words, having two sessions of courts in trying to address the backlog and the like, because you realize that the way the cases were handled with speed, it impressed the African society. And then the second question, I'm asking it on behalf of Honorable JJ, he has just left, unfortunately. He wants to know, he knows that there are some cases of the Algerians, those cases did not go well. His question is, what went wrong? Was there no legal aid available on the Algerian cases? And then, I think let me exclude the third question because it relates to the first one. I know of a court where it handles a large population at Kwamhlanga where there is no way you can have an urgent bail application. You wait for 2 months before you can make what in other places is an application for bail that you can bring within a day or so. There you wait for 2 months. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My question is in regard to the 20 outstanding cases. What I want to find out is, are there any foreigners involved in those cases? Because one of the underlying reasons of these dedicated courts was to avoid unfinished cases involving foreigners. And another one is just a comment regarding the volunteers. Are there any legally qualified persons unemployed in these volunteers? And that is the question. And the comment is, if there are any, I urge the department really to utilize their services. Thank you.
Honorable Swan.
Chair, I really want to commend the department on this project. I think it's really gone way beyond what we expected, and it's really a great success. And we know that it was interdepartmental, people working together, but one just thinks of, even in the high publicity of Paris Hilton and her friend, that case, the English soccer change room case, how the media were watching what you were doing as well. So from my side, I really want to commend that, and I trust that we are able to roll this out further and the lessons that you've learnt to our criminal justice sector, because now the expectation is, if we can do it during the Soccer World Cup, yes, admittedly in a small group of cases, but can we not roll it out more generally? And that is what we will now be looking at, but just from my side to commend you and pass that on. Thank you very much, Chair.
And
let me pick up seamlessly. The statement was made, and correctly, the confidence was created in our criminal justice system. Yes, we can, not so. That is what we proved to ourselves, and therefore that is what we must now continue to implement. And I want to ask you how you are going to implement the lessons learned in case flow management, because you have made that point. It seems to me, listening to you, that the key to the success here was not only the planning and the clarity about where you had wanted to end up, but your court operational center and the morning meeting. How did the meetings occur? Were they virtual meetings? Or were they telecons? Were they physical at each court? The court managers led this. How the crisp question is, How will this be applied to the 7-point plan, or has it overtaken the 7-point plan under the Criminal Justice Review? Will we simply incorporate it wholesale into the 7-point plan? Because implementation has more than started on the 7-point plan, not so. But it seems to me that is one of the keys. So there's your question. How will this fit into or alongside the 7-point plan? Or do we leave the 7-point plan and do something flowing from this excellent exercise?
I'm sure Honorable Smart will agree with the fact that without a proper plan, those activities would not have made sense. The reason that they were able to make sense, the language of what was intended to be achieved was clear. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, absolutely. That there is one problem that we were so successful that now the country expects us to carry on with this great success. So we must not... Absolutely. So we certainly mustn't let the country down. We've set a new bar, and that bar must just go higher and higher and higher. Chair, my one question. I read in the paper about a couple of the cases, especially involving the foreigners, one, the sort of biggest one being the Algerian case, in which sentence was passed and everything was done in record time, and it was on Sky News how well it had been handled and how quickly it had been handled. And 2 days after the World Cup, that particular sentence has already been taken back and reviewed. And apparently there are many of these foreign cases now where they're saying that the sentence that was passed was too harsh for the crime. Do we have any kind of indication how many of these sentences are being reviewed?
Are you asking a question? You are responding? Okay. All right, Mr. Tupia.
Chair, thanks very much for giving us the opportunity to do the presentation. I think from where we sit, it's probably very difficult for one to say this model can't be applied to our 750 courts. And what makes it particularly difficult for me is that if you look at our budget, we had dedicated 45 million for this project. So far we have spent 5 million. We are anticipating claims on Avon over time. I doubt very much if those claims will be more than 5 million. Right across the country. So we will still be left with a lot of money. We will come in very handy for our department because we are stretched for funds at the moment. And we are stretched because, as we will say next week, our budget has been cut by 1.4 billion in the MTF period. So we have to adjust our budget. There are a number of lessons that can be applied to managing our courts. Certainly, the level of focus can be maintained in our courts. The level of communication. I think every single day, there was information on each and every court. It came through our cell phones, it came through our emails, and compiling reports was not really very difficult. So there is something to learn there. The only challenge I see is the amount of overtime that has to be paid. Because even during the World Cup, we had a situation where whether the overtime we pay, can it be allowed to go beyond what the Basic Conditions of Employment Act allowed. I think that was one of the main challenges we experienced. We'll obviously have to employ more people, because if we apply it mainstream, we only run it with 56 courts. But to run it with 750 courts will be much more challenging. Because we had to get volunteers, we had to hire additional foreign interpreters, and so on. Maybe we can look at it. But I think the thoughts that I've come across in the department are two thoughts. One, maybe we could look at case backlogs. To see how we can ring-fence specific courts. We already have about 42 identified priority courts that focus on case backlogs. see to what extent can we apply this model. But secondly, what we are working on, because the team that was working on is attached to my office, we are trying to put together a service delivery improvement unit to monitor service delivery improvement in the courts and in other offices like the master's office, for example, because we have huge challenges in the master's office. So that's how we are trying to apply it. Lastly, I don't think we have been given an additional mandate insofar as this project is concerned, and therefore we can't say this has is now more important than the 7-point plan. I think the 7-point plan is very important, driven by the ministry, so it remains a very important project. But I think the point that one can make is that surely we can draw lessons from this and implement it into our day to day. So in fact, I think for today, I can actually say it's difficult for us to say we can't implement this model. I think we have to look at it this closely and see what proposals we can make. I don't think we can implement it in 750 courts. That I doubt very much, given particularly the financial constraints. But I think insofar as case backlog is concerned, we can look at a limited number of courts throughout the country in which we can try and implement the lessons learned.
Fine. We'll get back to this at the other sessions. I don't think you... No, I think that there are clear dangers. I mean, if you dispense justice at that speed, soon enough you're going to be dispensing with justice. I mean, that's not realistic. And I don't think we need to sit into the night either, although I see it's wonderful that Port Elizabeth managed to work through all their backlogs while there were no cases. Now, I don't mean that we must copy it exactly, of course not, but we must draw the lessons of which the morning conference appeared to me to be one. The court managers appeared to be pivotal. And I think we must draw the lessons. And not so far from now, of course, court management is going to pass into the hands of the judiciary and its independent administrative agency anyway. So it's a matter of trying to sort very fast what has gone wrong, so that by the time it passes to the court's administration agency, we've got something smoother in place. I don't think we can directly replicate this model. I don't think that's not even a good idea. But there are lessons.
Two follow-ups. We used to have the Saturday courts. Is this different? What if one was to think about extending it? This was after our sitting. Could one look at that as a possibility and as sitting on Saturday? And obviously there are budget constraints and one doesn't expect it on every court. And then the second very important aspect to me was the cooperation with the private sector, with the private attorneys, the law society. And I would also, I omitted to thank them as well for the good work that they did in volunteering to attend courts in whatever capacity. But can one not build on that for the future to continue looking at in particular, I think your focus is correct, the backlogs of the courts is hugely, and bringing in the private sector to sit on courts, even the Bar Council, we'll be meeting with them as well, and maybe we can engage them on that, but to bring in the private sector to assist as well. Could you comment on that? Thank you.
Can we get a detailed response from his team? I know he is leading, so he gives us overall, which is very good, and then you will come. Just keep detail, you got the questions, and then you will patch it.
Thanks, Chair. I'll ask members of my team to deal with certain questions. I think Alberto Sanepul, the project manager, can deal with the case involving Algerians. I'll deal with the 20 outstanding cases. We are trying to put a plan in place to manage the remaining cases. In fact, by yesterday we were told that there are no longer 20. So we are trying to check how many they are, but we need a plan in place. They certainly, some of them certainly involve for foreigners. So we need to have a plan in place and see how we deal with it. We can't just leave them because they will then disappear with you into the other cases. And so there'll definitely be a plan in place to check as to where we end with them. On the legally qualified volunteers, my colleague Cizio will deal with this. Dr. Devere, I think, has touched on the rollout, on the further rollout of the courts. The implementation of the lessons learned, what we are encouraging is that these lessons learned, especially around the Court Operations Center, if possible, should be taken further. But it's for the department management to make a decision around that. I think, as far as we know, there was only one case that was reviewed, and that was that one of the Algerians. We are not aware of any other case that was reviewed. So that's why it's the only case. I'll hand over to Alberto and then to Cizwe to respond to other questions. Thank you.
Swanapool. Thank you, Jay. Thank you for the good input we received today. We really appreciate it. I think it's a lot of hard work from all the colleagues, and an integrated approach was followed. Before I comment on the Algerian case, I just want to mention that sometimes, because there's millions rand budgets, and people tend to think that the solutions are all complex. But you can implement solutions, low effort, low cost, big impact. And that is what we aim for when we do our final closeout report, to see what can we have as quick wins. Now, the secret to the success of this project was to focus on the case flow management process, to see from the time that the crime was committed until it's finalized in court, what is the areas of concern that we need to red flag and to put special measures into place. And in this process, the Court Operational Center assists us as in accomplishing this. The people started, the different role players started to understand the role they play and integrated with the prosecutors, understand what's expected from SAPS, vice versa. So everybody had a common understanding, and they had real moments where they realized, if I do this, we can fast-track the process. Now, the whole project was about fast-tracking the process without compromising legal aspects. So if you have to finalize a case and you can't finalize it within less than 5 days, this will still be the case during the World Cup that we followed. So we didn't compromise any aspects to fast-track. That is the importance. Now, we expected when we produced the stats and the positive media reports that we will have comebacks after the World Cup. In the case of the Algerians, where they now want to reopen the case, etc. We're busy in consultation with the courts to see how we're going to accommodate that request. It's still a media aspect. It's still planned to reopen the case. So we will discuss that and see how we're going to approach it. But we did expect that. In short, and we even expect that as we proceed. The one thing is, people do not like a success story. So they're going to focus and they're going to see if there's some dirt that they can gather and bring forward. In short, I think the outstanding cases where foreigners are involved, I know only one of the 20 cases where we will have to bring foreigners back as witnesses. In some instances, with the culpable homicide case in Western Cape, the one witness is also the victim, and he's seriously injured, so the case was postponed till October. We have cases that was postponed because of bail applications that was allowed, and the suspects didn't pitch up at court for the trial date. So there's warrants of arrest out for that. Most of the 2010 cases will not need further foreign involvement. The witnesses already testified. If need be, there is money to bring them back. But as far as we're concerned, we really covered with regards to foreigners. And I think that was our whole goal, even though we realized that some complex cases will not be able to finalize during this time. We wanted to prevent people coming back from foreign countries to come and testify. And I think that we've accomplished at the end of the day. Thank you, Jay.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to deal with the issue of volunteers.
Sorry, sir. Sorry, my name is Siziwe Kengo. My apologies, Chair. My apologies, Chair. In the matter of volunteers, we have come across quite a number of legally qualified young people who are unemployed out there. We worked closely with the offices of the Premier to source unemployed young people. And as Mr. Mosala indicated in the presentation, that at this stage we are in the process of closing out the whole project, providing reports and everything. But still in that process, we are engaging human resources unit to see where we can place these young people, whether we can give them internships, whether we can give them the entry-level jobs, depending. At this stage, we cannot say for sure what is it that we are going to do exactly, but we are looking into it. It's not going to fall by the wayside. Into the matter of placing the volunteers somewhere within the legal system.
Thank you very much. Are you through? You're not through?
I am through, Chair. Okay. Thank you very much.
Just before you, I think what is important is that you guys will forgive me. I'm not always a carrier of good news. I like bad news a lot. So that their life must never be nice. I must always make sure that we render the life of bad news difficult so that they never enjoy themselves. You see, I think what is key about this import is that Msala and yourselves and the department, you understood that traveling from Tswane or Pretoria to this place is expensive. So what you're trying to do here must be so prepared such the main information that is required is put in place so you don't have to come back here. Because we are not putting budget for traveling between this city and so on. It is in that context that I'm critical of the traffic presentation. Because I want to say it up front. It doesn't show that we really set and ask ourselves what is the critical information that will be required. It also lacks the project elements that are presented in this protocol, in this report, that demonstrates that people sat somewhere and said, during this course, this is what information required by so and so. So when you say one presentation came down, you guys are flying, driving, whatever you're doing, but it's an expenditure. When you come here, there must be a demonstration that people took serious the importance of coming here. Otherwise, we are going to keep going. Now, we are tempted to say we need this information again. You're not going to come for free when you come back. You've got to pay. And I think parliament, people must take the parliament very well to come serious. So, I'm saying I'm not a carrier of good news all the time. You always forgive me as the life I'm living. We are impressed with the dedicated cause, but the department must reflect on the presentation on traffic, what to call on traffic. Because if this project management can work in a situation like this, it must work somewhere else. Because if you look at this World Cup thing, the intensity, the situation was very difficult. It was a very busy, intense, things had to be done speedily, but they were done correctly. The second issue is that to show how important proper planning is, Meneer Sonepur, 45 million, you end up spending 5 million. I know there's a possibility of claims, but what this indicates, proper planning can reduce expenditure, can reduce costs. Because when there is no proper planning, when people come to present things here that have got no name, you don't know what this thing is, but yet the money has got the name that is allocated to it. Surely you will spend more money trying to achieve something you can't explain. And if you are trying to achieve something you can't explain, you will spend more money because you keep on finding what is it. But once you have explained it, you won't spend beyond it because it has been described and it can be measured. That's exactly the results of proper planning. You reduce costs dramatically. And I'm saying to the department, it's your own project.
we expect it to reflect a bigger departmental approach. We are meeting you on the 11th of August. I'm preparing you for that date, so that you know something not far away from this must happen. I want to close by saying, Honorable Masdad, even if this thing cannot be applied to 750 courts, but this logic, this approach, can improve how those 750 courts operate, as we speak, significantly. It may not yield the exact results. I have gone to places, Mr. Ribier, where there's an integrated approach between prosecutors, police, magistrates, where there's a continuous communication. If an information was supposed to come from this side, you don't wait for a prosecutor to come the other week and say, what you brought to me last week was wrong. Because of the dynamic communication, as it arrives, you phone back and say, I don't think this is going to assist us. Sort it out. That dynamic relationship between all these institutions can change the situation in 750. We just have to try it and make it up. It can change dramatically. It may not yield the equal results. So the point I'm making is that let's copy this for the bigger department. Whether that has been done, we'll check next week when we meet on the 11th. That there's something closer to it. We have to demand these honorable members, because if we allocate money, money can be measured. So that which it pays for must also be measured. You can't throw money and then be satisfied with something that is not clean out of it. So you guys have set a very good example, and I think this committee is very proud of you. At that point, well done, department. I'm not a preacher of all good news. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Do you want to make a remark?
The point has been made that, well, thanks for the support and words of advice and appreciation expressed by the committee. And, of course, thanks to the team that has done all the good work. I think we will apply the lessons. For example, Honorable Steve, you raised the issue of Saturday courts. There is appreciation, particularly in the NPA, that Saturday courts did have some value, particularly in terms of reducing the backlogs. And if you look at this model, it's not very far from the model of Saturday courts, because we dedicated special time, we dedicated resources, we closely monitored the situation, there was proper communication, and we saw the figures on backlogs coming down. And this model used more or less the same principle. I'm sure on the later on, we will come back to you on how we would want to apply the lessons learned, so that we are much more coherent and clear about how we want to take the process forward. But very much for this.
Thank you very much. At that point, I thought that's the end of the meeting. Okay. Well, thank you very much.